Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
Hello, geekologists. Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. Here we go. Because you demanded it, the episode we've all been waiting for. We're probably the first podcast to ever talk about this subject. The first time for someone to solve the question that's on everybody's mind. We're going to have the final answer once and for all. Which is better, Star Wars or Star Trek? One has to win, one has to lose. There's a right answer, right? They have to compete each other. That's what geek culture is telling us out there in the world. All the clickbait stuff says that there has to be a final answer. There has to be a winner. There has to be a loser. And so we're going to solve that today. And well, friends, if that sounds a little off-brand for Systematic Geekology, you're right. You're right. That is not the kind of episode that we're going to do today. Happy May the 4th be with you. In the spirit of May the 4th be with you, we are going to have a conversation. A part of our Versus series, comparing two franchises and where they're similar, where they're different, why, if there is any tension between the two, why that tension is there, why people say that we have to compete against one another. That's the kind of conversation we're going to have today to model for you how to have a healthy conversation around these things that we geek out on. And so I couldn't do this alone. I couldn't do this episode alone. So we're bringing on board, yes, one of our new official hosts of Systematic Geekology, Matthew Winter. Matthew, welcome to the show. We've chatted before online and have intersecting Venn diagrams of our fandoms, but here we are, the first time ever. This is a historic episode when Matthew and Will come together and solve the problem of Star Wars and Star Trek. If there is a problem, welcome to the show, Matthew. Yes. There we go. So glad you're here. Glad we can do this. We'll share more about what our kind of history is with Star Wars and Star Trek and why we're having this conversation today. But first off, what are we geeking out on today? Matthew, what are you geeking out on?
Gosh, reading a book right now. Man, it is a slow trod because there's a lot to it. Reaching Out by Nouwen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Henry Nouwen.
So I'm starting that. It's related to a class I'm doing at church, and it's good. Other stuff.
Nice.
I just started playing Xenoverse again because there's some new DLC coming. So I'm getting used to playing that again for the new DLC.
Nice. Yeah, I like it that we have like a wide range of hosts here at Systematic Geekology. There's a reason why we don't have just two or three hosts. We have, our goal is like 14, because we know that the breadth and depth of fandom and geekdom, what people geek it out from books and rich theology to games, board games, video games, and the MCU, all that stuff is there. So that's what we try to do here at Systematic Geekology. And so if there's something you haven't heard us discuss or talk about out there, friends, let us know, reach out, send us a message, say, have you seen this? We're always looking for recommendations and things to geek out on. What I'm geeking out on, it is it's a good time to be an X-Men fan because of the cartoons and the comics that are coming up. But it's also like that like apocalyptic geekdom genre just isn't going away. It's always going to be around. And I'm not going to say Fallout. I'm late to the game on a show called Station 11. Matthew, have you heard of Station 11?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I didn't either until a friend said, hey, you should watch the show. And it's on Max. It's a 10 episode limited series. There's not going to be a season two. It's a couple years old and it is apocalyptic realism. And actually my daughter was reading the book and she told me she was reading the book and said it was really good. And I kind of forgot about it. And then when someone mentioned this show, it is such a good show. We did the finale last night. It is beautifully directed and shot, and the story, it is so good. So here's the deal. There's a flu pandemic that wipes out 99% of the world. And so 20 years later, they flash forward, flash back. What is the world like 20 years after, like everything goes to hell in a handbasket, literally. And so, but the thing about this book is that it was written before COVID, like years before COVID, like 10 years before COVID maybe. And then they were filming the show and they were halfway through with it when COVID broke out. And so they had to shut this down because of a global pandemic, about a show about a global pandemic. And I can imagine what the actors and actresses who are filming this and read the script were like, what is happening? We're literally living what is going on. There's unknown days of COVID, but it's a little triggering. If COVID was hard for you and you're seeing people walking masks and the fear of death and what are we going to do next kind of thing. But man, beautiful in how it tells its story. It is geek adjacent because not only apocalyptic literature, but also is the underlying story is like this person writing a graphic novel that becomes like almost like a sacred text in this world for people in it. So amazing show. Can't recommend enough. I know we're going to be quick about this, but I can't. Station 11. It's just after last night, man, I was just like, man, that is good stuff. So that's what we're geeking out on. Let us get into the topic of the day. Star Wars, Star Trek, two of the most popular franchises that are out there, the best in the sci-fi game. They both have the most loyal and passionate fans, but also they have a part of it, a lot of fan backlash and a lot of toxic fandom around these franchises as well. And we're not going to solve all those problems today, but we're going to give a little bit of kind of our history behind it and kind of the nuance behind these two franchises, how they're similar, how they're different, and how we can handle those things. So Matthew, I'll start with you. What's some of your history with both of these franchises? I know you kind of lean more into Star Trek, if I'm right, but like, what is your history with them and where do you stand right now with these franchises?
As an adult, that's true. But, you know, definitely, like, I can't think of a time in my life without either one of these IPs. So, I mean, they go all the way back to just, you know, Matt as a wee little lad. yeah. Gosh, you know, as a kid, this was definitely much more of a toss-up for me. I mean, I had all of the novelizations of the movies. I don't remember what it was called because it was so long ago. But my mom had signed me up for some kind of like through the mail Star Wars RPG thing. So I was reading a book and I would have character cards and all this stuff and go through and do missions and all that. So, yeah, I had technical manuals and all that stuff. So I am no stranger to Star Wars, but, I don't know, as I got older and matured and actually lived life a little bit, I began to appreciate more of what Star Trek brings to the table, which I really think that's the basis of this whole conversation. I mean, as a kid, you know, the Force and lightsabers and all that are the coolest friggin' thing in the whole world. But as I grew up and hopefully matured, you know, the vote's out on that. But I grew to like Star Trek better just because it does more for me on a personal level.
Yeah, nice. What would you say, like Star Trek right now, kind of what's out there in terms of some storylines or shows or movies that you're like, yeah, I just listened to the Earth Day Star Trek 4 episode that you guys did. I loved it. Yeah. I went back. I remember seeing that in the theater when I was younger. But then, going back and watching at least the first half, I need to finish it. But man, I was like, golly, this is so goofy and fun and good. Is there a certain part now that you're like, yep, this is what really gets me up to watch or get into this certain
Right now I'm kind of on a Trek hiatus. I'm very cyclical and very obsessive with how I do things. I'll get into something and it's just full bore all the time, that thing, until I'm sick of it. And then I move on to my next, and I'm not in the Star Trek part of the cycle right now.
There's seasons. Yeah, but there are definitely seasons.
I am looking forward to, I haven't watched tons of Strange New Worlds yet, although I absolutely love what I've seen. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, binge culture has kind of ruined a lot of that stuff. And I want to wait until there's more and then I can can watch all of it.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, what I've shared here at Systematic Ecology before, that my top fan of my avatar is Luke Skywalker with a green lightsaber as a Jedi. But I relate to the story that has always been a part of my life, because the first movie I saw in the theater was A New Hope when I was 5 years old. At the end of that summer, and so from there, as a 5 year old, getting all the toys and having my imagination sparked with this sci-fi fantasy, high fantasy, spirituality, good versus evil, superheroes, all that thing was a part of my early childhood. And then leading up to Empire Strikes Back as an 8 year old, it just could not have hit me in a better spot in terms of what all of us in the neighborhood and classmates loved and talked about and pretended to be when we were kids. And then you had Return of the Jedi, which put, sealed up the story and did those kinds of things. And so then, of course, Star Wars, watching the movies on the VHS or when they came on HBO or whatever. And then the novelization of the extended universe and those things came out. And then I hit teenage land and I was like, yeah, I love Star Wars, but I'm not going to lean super hard into following every single book that comes out or that kind of thing. So there's a little bit of a hiatus there. But then when the prequels came out, we're like, yeah, let's jump back in. And of course, as an OG fan, I was kind of like, man, I really wrestled with the prequels and what they were doing, what George Lucas was doing. And I was a part of that fan backlash of like, if I would have written this, I would have done it this way. Why do you do it this way, George? I know better than you. So I was a part of that. And then a little later on, to be honest, I was excited that Disney acquired the IP, because I was like, that means more Star Wars. I was a little frustrated with George Lucas and what he had done, and I understand why he stopped making Star Wars, because of toxic fandom. And I thought it was kind of dead and okay. But then here comes Disney to kind of resurrect it, to bring it back. And then here comes the fans again. We're like, if I was writing, this is what I would write for my thing. Again, that same echo of fans doing that. But Star Wars has always been a part. And I remember as a kid, Star Trek, I was way into anything sci-fi I could get my hands on. I loved it. The original Battlestar Galactica on TV, complete ripoff of Star Wars for the TV. I loved it. V, Buck Rogers, all that stuff on TV. I was like, yeah, let me get a part of it. And then when Star Trek came on, I was like, what? Why are they talking so much? Why are there blasters on like stun or phase, what is this? Why aren't there more lasers and action and dogfights in space? And then later on, one of my shows like, oh, Star Trek is this is what it's trying to do with that franchise, as opposed to like Star Wars, high fantasy, faster, more intense, was George Lucas thing. I think Star Trek, the original intent was, let's be thoughtful. I don't think maybe the stereotype's there, but like Twilight Zone in space, let's have a more in-depth conversation around nuance of like life and progressivism and futurism and what humans could be like in the future and how we can handle our problems. Star Wars was more like the space opera fantasy kind of thing. So I noticed that as a kid and leaned more into Star Wars, but as I get older, like you, matured, I'm a different person now than I was 5-10 years ago. So I definitely appreciate Star Trek. And then for me, I will also say J.J. Abrams reboots of the movie when he did the Star Trek reboot in 2009. I loved it because J.J. Abrams is a Star Wars fan. He wanted to make Star Trek more like Star Wars. And I understand original like fans of Star Trek, why they're frustrated with J.J. Abrams. But for me, I was like, yeah, you're leaning right into my faster, more intense kind of thing. But I understand the criticism behind those things as well. So that's kind of our, you know, history behind and where we're coming from. Yeah, as you said, there's so much streaming. There's so much content. I wish I had more time to go deeper into Star Trek stuff that's out there. But with my fandom, anything Star Wars comes up, I'm gonna watch it the day it comes out kind of thing. And then maybe I'll get to Star Trek one day. I don't know when that one day is gonna be, but maybe one day I'll do more of those kinds of things.
That's where I was at with kind of prepping for this is, I went through and I watched Solo, and I'm in Clone Wars right now, and I'm watching some of the Star Wars stuff I haven't seen, which just reminded me how much I absolutely still do love Star Wars because it is awesome. And it's, it's just as much a part of my DNA as Star Trek is.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Now, both of us would say out there, friends who are listening or hanging out and watching us on YouTube, that we'll confess that like Star Wars, Star Trek's not like the original sci-fi. There is a lot that came before it. They didn't invent sci-fi. I was going back and reading and prep for this a little bit, like what was the first sci-fi? And some people say like Mary Shelley's like Frankenstein in the 1800s was the first sci-fi speculative fiction monster kind of geeky genre. You know, I know there's the debate out there about that, but I think that's kind of neat that to think about going way back to the 1800s. I think people always look to the stars and wondered what's behind it, what could we be? Speculative fiction's always been a part of human nature and storytelling. But there's, again, like the pulp writing of the early 1900s of John Carter of Mars, and then you have Flash Gordon, you had Buck Rogers, you had all those things. Then you had Dune come out in the 60s as a novel and sci-fi. And then you had the Space Odyssey, 2001 right. Space Odyssey in the late 60s. And I think that sci-fi was popular. And then Star Trek debuted, when did Star Trek 66. Debut? It was 1966. Yeah. 66, in September. So it was only had a few seasons, and then it had kind of a second breath when they started making the movies again and leaning into Next Generation. But it predates Star Wars. But George Lucas, he really wanted to do a Flash Gordon film, and he couldn't get the rights. So he says, you know what? I'm going to do my own Flash Gordon and write my own movie and do it myself and make it more fast and more intense. From the get go of the opening scene of A New Hope, that big ship and lasers fire, we're going to go full steam ahead in the storyline. So Star Wars upped the game when it came to like franchises and pop culture and faster, more intense. But sci-fi has always kind of been there in the last 100 years or more when it comes to capturing the human imagination and thinking about science and who people can be and that kind of thing. So anything else to add there in the gaps of just acknowledging that there are franchises that have come before Star Wars and Star Trek.
I think, atomic era sci-fi, we can't not talk about Asimov.
Yeah.
Right in there. Really helped define the genre. And his definitions are part of actually what I was using when we came up with this outline. So.
There you go. Yeah. So acknowledging those who've come before, we're all playing off each other's stories and ideas and building off those kinds of things. And I think we have to acknowledge that's kind of where, if you're going to pit these two against each other, you have to acknowledge what came before it, but also how they played off each other, borrowed from each other, mimicked each other, copied each other, those kinds of things too, I think is a part of this conversation when it comes to that. Matthew, why in the world do we have to, or that people set up Star Wars and Star Trek against each other, or the versus aspect of this conversation?
I think influence. We just talked about, there was so much sci-fi and stuff that was out before, but like sci-fi was never the meta. It was never something that was this super culturally influential thing. And I think a Star Trek came along. It didn't do that right away. Star Wars came along and instantly just changed everything as far as cinematic sci-fi. And then through that, though, and then through the movies and then some of the newer Trek spinoffs, or I can't say new, there's newer stuff, but the second gen of Star Trek there, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, it became just as culturally significant and part of the meta as Star Wars. And I think that and just the nature of the fandom and how passionate we are the two, you're not going to have someone getting up on their roof, you know, shouting, at the stars dressed up like a Cylon. It's just not, like other fandom just don't have the intensity of Star Trek and Star Wars. I think it has to do with just the meta influence on the culture as a whole of these two franchises, and just the passion and or toxicity of the fan bases. Really kind of make them where they're a similar cultural phenomenon, at least.
So, yeah, that well said. I like what you said there about the game changer of Star Wars and kind of ramping up to that. If it wasn't George Lucas, it was going to be something was going to do that, because I think we're primed and ready for one of these big grand narratives and kind of where movies and storytelling and narratives, when it comes to the big popcorn flick and what's gathering people into the theaters and that kind of thing. I think I actually judge time. Of course I judge time by the year of our Lord, and those kind of things and dates. But when I think of like pop culture, when I think of like years, before 1977 and after 1977, like I that was a movie. That's a story that happened. Oh, that's before George Lucas came on the scene and started telling Star Wars. Cause I do think there was a different way you told stories, or way you did things before and after Star Wars, how you created movies to get people in the theater. And both these franchises have been commodified and franchised and let's make some money off of it. And they, and different times and places and ways that has kind of eaten its own tail or tried to promote its own self or make money, and the money making machines. And they know that, the fans and those who are critics of it. So I think, how do we keep these monsters going, and how do we keep the monster fed as it moves forward too, is part of that, rather than just telling good stories, I think is a part of that. But yeah, that's how I judge time. And I think.
Did you know Systematic Ecology has a YouTube channel? Now you do. And while you're there, you can see exclusive stuff like our comic book catch-up series, Manga Mustard, Drinks with Tejas, the companion series to our annual theme. You can go Friday Night Frights with me, where I go through cryptozoology, ufology, and more. You can also go to see Spidey Swingbys, where I'm doing every chronological appearance by release of Spider-Man from Amazing Fantasy 15 all the way to the modern age. You can also find exclusive shorts on YouTube there, as well as other bonuses for extra episodes that we do that don't end up on the podcast proper. So I want to see you over there on YouTube.
I wonder your thoughts on this. Like, I was thinking about this last night. It's like, what part of this rivalry comes from the outside of it and the inside? And the reason the outside of it is that people looking down in the early days, was it people looking down on geeks when we weren't as popular and the mainstay, where people looking down on geeks and go, oh, look, you guys are all the same. The Trekkies and Star Wars, ha ha, picking fun and bullying them. And then within the inside, you have the two like, no, I'm not like them. I'm this way. I'm that way. I'm a Trekkie because I'm smart and thoughtful. And then the Star Wars, like, I'm a Star Wars guy because I like saving princesses in space, and I like lightsabers, and I like action. And you boring friend, so one of those stereotypes are kind of fanned into flame by others from the outside, just because it was cool back in the 80s to pick on geeks and nerds.
I think that's actually probably very, very true, because I don't think internally, at least within the content, I don't think there's any kind of deliberate reference to each other at all within within the material. They're very much deliberately their own things, not even trying to do the same thing, which we'll get to in a bit. Absolutely from onlookers from the outside who aren't aware of the material, you know, it's all just, you know, I had a friend in high school, and she called it all Starland. Like it all just existed and whatever. And whether you were into Star Trek, Star Wars, Stargate, whatever, you were part of Starland in her. So if you're not part of it and you don't get it, I can see why we all just look like crazy, obsessed weirdos who were part of Starland.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think about kind of the tribalism in our culture, mm-hmm. when it comes to like politics and religion and that kind of thing. You define yourself against someone who's you're not, you know, because I'm a lifelong Lutheran. I'm a Lutheran pastor. Mm-hmm. A big part of my life and upbringing is like, well, what's a Lutheran? Well, we're not right. Catholic. And it was like, wait, that doesn't quite make, because if you go into our worship services, there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of people wearing robes, and there's a lot of liturgy, yep. and there's a lot of peace be with you and also with you kind of thing going on. Why, what do you mean we're not? What does that mean? So you dig into kind of where you are different, where you are the same, the common ground, that kind of thing. So I think, you know, yeah, it's from the outside people looking in, but also from the inside too. There's a rival. There's something about our nature that wants to pit ourselves against other or huddle into our own groups mm-hmm. and in-group. And if they're going to pick on me from the outside, I'm going to be safe with my own tribe this way. And it happens in fandom. And so I think that was kind of natural for Star Trek and Star Wars to do. And then as geek culture grew and became a mainstay, when it comes, I mean, had that with Marvel and DC. Yeah. You know, they were copying each other. I'm not DC. I'm not. Thor is not Superman, but Superman is not Thor. But guess what? Guess who's the headliner? And Avengers number one back in the 1960s, Thor, you know, not Captain America, Thor, because they needed like a Superman guy for for Avengers. But there's a reason why they're doing that. And I do think sometimes a rising tide lifts all boats, but then also it can become toxic about who's better, who's worse, and that kind of thing. And so I think that's part of why we're having this conversation here around this holiday we call May 4th and Free Comic Book Day, and acknowledging here comes summer with the summer blockbuster and that kind of stuff, to kind of go ahead and put it out there. And I love that within our own host team, we have both Star Wars and Star Trek fans, and we can jab at each other and tease each other. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, what is it that we're trying to share? What geeks us out on that kind of thing? So yeah, little role models out there. We talk about how like, yeah, you think church can get toxic fans or toxic members. Guess what? Just go to Comic-Con, hang around Comic-Con for a little while and listen to some of the conversations, and it's no different. So yeah, you lifted this up, and I think it's an important too. Like when we're talking about sci-fi, we're talking about fantasy, Star Trek being sci-fi and its history of Roddenberry being like kind of a futurist, more agnostic, kind of anti-religion, but like, hey, there's hope for humanity. Science is going to solve our problems. But then in Star Wars, this save the princess in space, good versus evil, laser swords. How would you define that? If someone was like, hey, what is the difference between franchises, but also like Asimov definition of sci-fi? Right.
So, I mean, that's why like one of the things when this topic came up, you know, I instantly thought, I've always thought with this so-called rivalry is that we're comparing apples to oranges, because really, like, Star Trek is true sci-fi in almost every definition of the word. And Star Wars, while it may happen in space, it's really just Lord of the Rings in space.
It really is.
You know, it's just, it is good. It is good versus evil, and you know, they call it the Force, but really it's just space magic. They're wizards in space. I mean, they mm-hmm. even wear robes, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So, not that that's bad. I mean, fantasy is amazing and it is fantastic, but it is its own thing and does something different than what sci-fi does, and the main difference is that so sci-fi, usually the whole thing is built around some kind of scientific premise, usually. So for Star Trek, for instance, the catalyst of what helped unite unite humanity and create the Federation and all of that was the warp drive. You wouldn't have Star Trek or any of that stuff if they hadn't invented that. And then the other thing is just generally in sci-fi, what makes something science fiction and not just fiction is that it is based on existing scientific principles. Just expand it on. It is to say, hey, what could this thing be in the future? And usually, like Star Trek especially, you can Google, well, how does warp drive work? And there's just a full technical, whatever, scientific explanation of how it could all work and all of that. So what makes something science fiction is the science. Absolutely.
Yeah. I like that. Like the, cause when you ask, I love asking like real scientists. We have a lot around our congregation. And, since we're in the Research Triangle near Duke and UNC, like we often have grad students and doctors in particle physics and PhD in particle physics and astrophysics and that kind of thing. So like when you ask them, like, which is your favorite kind of sci-fi? They'll often say like Star Trek because it's more realistic. They'll say, I can't wrap my head around like the, don't call Star Wars like realistic because you're right, it's fantasy in space. And so, yeah, some of these things just aren't capable of happening in space. But Star Trek, they at least try to acknowledge there's some scientific backing and speculation of what things could look like. And I think about our own world, like advances in technology, and then here this kind of emergence of AI and what could be possible. It could be scary, but it could also be helpful. And what if there are like conscious robots here in 50 years from now? You know, it's like, oh boy, here comes, you know, data or C-3PO or whatever, you know, like, oh, here we go. You know, that kind of thing. And so what leads that kind of sandbox that we play in and speculate against to hopefully help us ask the question what it means to be human and our place in the universe is kind of what's behind these things. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that fantasy also gives us the fantasy storytelling gives us an opportunity to then ask those existential questions of what is right or wrong? How would I act in that situation? If I am a hero, am I a villain? Those kind of big questions revolve around fantasy, but sci-fi is a different way in a tool that it uses to get to those same kind of grand meta narratives that we just talked about earlier. So yeah, I think that distinction is good. There's similarities there. They play off each other. But man, I tell you, What would you rather? We'll talk about later. Our bonus question: What would you rather have? What would you rather have? Phasing, beam me up, warp drive, or lightsabers and laser guns? Yeah, we'll see. You know, we'll tease that later on to do that. Man, there's something else I was going to say about, you know, in terms of the spirituality and magic of fantasy and thinking through that. It's not that science fiction doesn't have religion, but it does lean more into kind of the tension between the two rather than just kind of acknowledging this all part of one world that maybe Star Wars or high fantasy would do in terms of magic. Yeah. All right. So let's transition here. If we're going to say, you know, what is the story or the morals or the myths that these franchises are trying to share? What would you say, Matthew? This is one thing we wanted to really kind of lift up that, yeah, there's not only fun, popcorn, fantasy. I'm excited about seeing all the special effects and how CGI works, but also what is the story that it's trying to sell? What was George Lucas trying to tell? What was Roddenberry trying to tell? And then what are these franchises trying to tell now? Before like fandom reacts because they didn't, you know, and I'm a part of that because they didn't portray a certain legacy character the right way. What is the story trying to say or communicate to us? Not necessarily an agenda, but what is it trying to say?
Well, Star Trek, you know, at least in it is almost singular in especially for that atomic era, almost all sci-fi was dystopian. It was some always post some kind of you know, event or you know, atomic, you know, whatever were. And then like humanity had to unite to survive or whatever. But Roddenberry doesn't have that, right?
Yeah.
It's a utopian future rather than a dystopian future. And then that's, that's all basically just humanity was very much like it is right now. We invented warp drive, which got the attention of the Vulcans, which taught us we are not alone. So with that, we explored the stars, and we were able to create this really peaceful federation of coexistence just based on the fact that they can transport and just replicate matter and things like that. There's no more wars or poverty because resources are infinite. As long as they have the energy to create, they can just make stuff.
Yeah, and I guess they also have that prime directive too. Like they
eventually,
like if there are other civilizations who are behind, we're going to let them catch up to our scientifically advanced. We're smarter than you, better than, not necessarily better than you, but maybe, I don't know. Like we're going to let you catch up, you guys who are behind, and not meddle a little bit. So there's that prime directive, a part of that, like that futurism as well.
So I really think whereas Star Wars is supposedly at least a long, long time ago. So it's,
far, far away. A long time ago. It's ancient. It's in the past of a more civilized time or a warring nation or a time when you could tap into the magic and spirituality of where Star Trek is moving years forward, where we're going to lean into the science,
And then back to the last question, I think that's more of some of the differences between typical science fiction and fantasy. Is science fiction almost always exists or in our reality. It's not supposed to be a different time or a different place or like a different universe or whatever. It is our world, our universe, our existence just in the future. Whereas fantasy, at least good fantasy, world builds. You're in this whole other place. In this, that is far removed from our reality. So
that's good. Yeah. And I think people say, say what you want about George Lucas in terms of how he writes dialogue or how he directs actors and kind of the acting, not winning any Oscars anytime soon, but in terms of the world building and the imagination behind it all and using the technology of the day or the special effects of the day to help communicate what this world looks like and what it could be or that kind of thing. That's where he did. So that's kind of my frustration there with Lucas there towards the end of the original series and the prequels is not listening to the other storytellers. You've built this great world. Listen to other people on how you can tell a better story with the characters that you have, kind of thing. So instead of like the yes men, yes women around them saying this is what I'm gonna do. How do we let people I can see where that's hard to do. It's your baby. You're gonna communicate what you want. So and I think I like this idea of Star Trek of the explorer, the expanse of the stars, and who we encounter is gonna teach us who we are and our place in the universe. Mm-hmm. And then I like that Star Wars does have this kind of good versus evil, the morality and ethics of what does it mean to love my neighbor or to the light side and the dark side of our existence. What wolf or Jedi or Sith are we going to feed more into, our fear or our hope and love for the other? So I think taking care of the other. So that story really speaks to me, especially this time in my life, as a minister, shepherding a community, thinking about the light side, the dark side, and what are we going to feed? What are we going to lean into more or give more energy to? That kind of thing, I think is important in this day and age, right along with that we're advancing scientifically as fast as we can, rightfully or whatever, or dangerously. And I do think, have you watched Three Body Problem or heard about Three Body Problem yet?
Three Body Problem.
Yeah.
No.
It's a book by a Chinese author. Loved the book. And then they made a show on Netflix and doing pretty well. And Three Bodies is three sons or orbital bodies in space that rotate around one another. Mm-hmm. And so there is the they're unpredictable. There's chance. There's random things that happen in the midst of all that. So the reason I bring that up is because like this, the premise is there are aliens heading our way. And so what do they attack? They know they're going to get here in like a couple hundred years, 400 years. So what do they know that we're going to advance enough to where we can beat them by the time they get here. So what do? They attack our science. They try to put our science to a halt. They try to break that down so we can't advance so we can beat them. So it's an interesting premise when it comes to that. But I think of that like Star Trek. Like there's another different way to think about like where are we going to be 100 years, 1,000 years from now? What's going to keep us being human? Or what makes us human? And I think that's what people wrestling with AI and robotics and those kinds of things. Right. But then Star Wars, you know, reflecting back on magic and fantasy and good versus evil and empire and systems that can oppress. So all that's there and all of it's fun in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. There you go, folks. I think I could talk about this maybe until tonight, midnight. We could have hours and hours of these things. And so, of course, we're not the final voice in all this and we're not hitting on every single theme. If there's a theme that we missed or something that we're missing or something that draws to mind, something that you have about these ideas, about these franchises, let us know. We'll keep talking about it. We're not going to stop talking about Star Wars and Star Trek. Let me just say, we're not going to stop. So Matthew, like, in terms of, we talked about it a little bit, but you know, is there a current or a favorite story or plot thread through the franchises, either one that you want to link to that in the greater canon that is your favorite that you're like, yeah, this is what really gets me going. When they start talking about this, when they start leaning into this aspect of this franchise or storyline or the greater canon, is there something that's like, yeah, that's why I'm saddling up with a bowl of popcorn.
Gosh, that's hard Star Trek, especially. I can definitely say, maybe not even with Star Wars either.
Yeah.
You know, there's, and maybe, you know, maybe it's nostalgia or what have you, but there's definitely just something about that original trilogy. In Star Wars, you know, the initial vision before, you know, other people got a hold of it and expanded it. Now, some of the expansion is good and it is better. I'm not saying that, but anything that comes after, you know, at least in theory, if it's good, really just springs from that. And then. I'm thinking here.
Yeah, while you're thinking, I'll just kind of echo that with Star Wars. There's some nostalgia about that original trilogy and why I get a little touchy about legacy characters and those things. Mm-hmm. But I think now, even with the Ahsoka series, the thing that got me most excited is thinking about different ways to approach the Force that's not so binary. Mm-hmm. Light and dark or good or bad, the gray Jedi, the fall of the Jedi Order, because it kind of got too like institutionalized and turned in on itself and blind. But then how is the Force for everyone? You know, there's still oppressive regimes and empire and people who want to take advantage of a universe like that or commodify it or the lust for control and power. But I think this kind of ancient idea of the Force and who wields it or not and how to use that to make people better or the universe a better, the galaxy a better place, that's what I really lean into, get into. And so that's why these present me. I love Mandalorian. I love Baby Yoda. but I want to know more like his approach to the Force and where he's going to be as a Jedi. Mm. And then I'm really looking forward to this Dawn of the Jedi movie. Like of all the things they've talked about in Star Wars, I like what they're doing. I'm not without my opinions on certain present day stuff, but man, when I hear about the plot line or what could happen with the Dawn of the Jedi way at the beginning of the first emergence of a Jedi and how to use the Force, I cannot wait I cannot wait. And I think because it's not connected to a legacy character, maybe we'll come in with less baggage and be a little bit more open to that. I know I will.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm kind of looking forward to. And I do like Star Trek, and I like the original cast. I like the J.J. Abrams verse, you know, but you know, if they were going to put another Star Trek movie out in the theater, whoever's directing it, whether it's Quentin Tarantino or whether it's J.J. Abrams or whatever, or Leonard Nimoy comes back from the grave and directs another film, I would I'd be there ready to go with that in mind.
You know, the Dawn of the Jedi sounds, gosh, if it's good, it'll be
it'll be a game changer.
Yeah, well, because I was always a fan of the KOTOR games, so the Knights of the Old Republic. And just getting to see the Jedi Wars way back was awesome. Just filling in, because that's what's cool. Like, yes, it's a lot. These stories are a long, long time ago, but just the reality that there's thousands of years of stories before the ones that we've gotten is cool.
Now, Star Trek does that a little bit too, right? Like, you have the main cast, the original cast from the 60s, but they've gone back and like the emergence of warp drive and leading up to that cast. There's been other captains of the Enterprise before.
Yeah.
So there's some prequels there. And then there's some future, I guess, discoveries, like the future of where it is now and that kind of thing. They plan around with those timelines.
There's too. 200 or 300 years there between, you know, that and when with the initial story that we got. But even more than that, you know, if they wanted to go more alien with it, because we know that the Vulcans had warp drive a couple hundred years before we did. And then there are even older, more ancient spacefaring civilizations that have been out there for thousands of years that they encounter. So some people don't like the more alien-centric story arcs in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. There is some contention there. But I have always loved the Klingon story arcs and the Vulcan story arcs. And some of the pieces where it pulls us a little bit out of being more human-centric. I'm actually exploring more about who and what these aliens are. But even in that, you're still able to get the takeaway and ask, okay, well, what does this tell us about humanity? How does this, you know, reflect on my, you know, my ethical standards and my, you know, religious or not religious beliefs, as the case may be, or whatever? By exploring something other than ourselves, right? We're always able to use that as a mirror to reflect back on, okay, well, what is it about them that is other, that speaks to maybe something that isn't in me that should be or could be?
Yeah, that's great. Is there a particular book or like show or something that leans into kind of like the Vulcan idea or those kind of things?
Yeah,
or the alien?
So it's, Enterprise is hit or miss for people. I'm actually really a fan of it. But the entire fourth season of Enterprise is Vulcan-centric. And the Vulcans essentially at the end of that become the Vulcans that we're used to from the later series. Because, you know, while Vulcans are logical and supposedly emotionless and all of this stuff, they also do have some kind of mysticism and spirituality. The whole run of the movie, the original series movies from 2, 3, and 4 is really about Spock's soul, the Vulcan Katra. That's really good. Some people don't, they think they're the worst episodes. I don't. Any of the Klingon episodes in, The Next Generation, really, when Worf gets to explore his Klingon-ness, or any of the episodes that happen on Kronos or are more Klingon Empire centric, where we get to understand a little bit better their feudal system and their honor system and, what it is to be or not be a good Klingon. And like, how does Klingon honor compare to what we think of as honor? Are these compatible? Are we incompatible? What can we learn?
I love that. Yeah, man, and good sci-fi and good storytelling helps us explore those questions. Mm-hmm, and that's why we keep doing it. And we'll keep telling this story. I think what makes us human is the ability to create and articulate story and meaning and purpose around it to help us process our lives and where we've been, where we are, and where we're going. And so, I think where it runs into problems and people have different opinions about, you know, how they should tell their stories of their favorite characters in the same way, like if I gave a bad Christmas sermon about who Jesus is or isn't, people are going to complain like, wait a minute, that's not the Jesus I know. Like, so there's definitely criticism to come around that if you're going to just try to go off base and do your own fanfic on something, people are going to like, all right, that doesn't really match up with the canon we have here. But I think when people hold around the kind of the campfires of sci-fi, they know good storytelling when they hear it. I think the emergence of the next big thing for Star Wars episodic television with The Acolyte, you know, that the before the prequels and this emergence of the Sith, a couple hundred years, wherever it's set in the time frame, it's got a lot of lightsabers. I'm excited. High Republic era, blaze a lightsaber and I'm going to be sit up a little bit straighter in my seat. But I think, but then you have the fans going, wait a minute, there's this one comment in the Phantom Menace where they talk about, we haven't seen a Sith in 1,000 years. And how come this is happening now? Did they not know? I'm like, let them tell their story first before you start like nitpicking canon and whether, you know, they're not going to align with George Lucas's vision yet. Let them tell their story first. And then at the end, listen to the whole thing first. Then you can go back and go, well, you know, this sat with me, this didn't sit with me.
Right.
We're allowed to have those opinions.
But then, the dark side does cloud the Jedi's ability to sense too. So
100%.
Just because they haven't been aware of Sith for 1,000 years doesn't mean there wasn't Sith.
I know. So. I know. Exactly. That seems a little. It seems a little. Easy to see, but I don't know. Maybe their opinions are clouded by the dark side of toxic fandom as well. Who knows? We've all been there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. This has been super fun. Yeah. And so we're going to get into a little now. We're going to wrap up here in a minute, but I do want to share our bonus questions. So for patrons out there, you get to hear our answer when it comes to this. But if you're not one, a patron yet, hop over, just a few bucks to help us keep going and moving forward and keeping our enterprise and our big star cruiser moving forward through the universe fandom. We're gonna ask the question and answer, what would we rather have? Beam me up, tech, or lightsabers? So there you go, friends. Thanks for listening. We know there's a ton of options out there. We know that there's so much that you can consume when it comes to streaming and also when it comes to podcasts. But we're glad that we have a community here of hosts and friends and listeners who enjoy these conversations to help them think deeper about who they are and what's going on in the world. And so thank you, folks. And may the force be with you always.
Live long and prosper.
You. Hey friends, this is your pal, Will Rose, and I have some exciting news. Systematic Ecology will return to Theology Beer Camp this year, October 17th through the 19th in Denver, Colorado. And we hope that you can join us. We are part of Theology Beer Camp in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, at my home church in my hometown. And that year, Theology Beer Camp was called the God Pods. And then we were in Missouri, a part of the Geek Stage. Yes, we had a whole entire Geek Stage where we had workshops and speakers and had incredible conversations. And Theology Beer Camp last year was called the God Pods
Strike Back. So you kind of see where this is going. And so this year, the theme is the return of the God Pods. And so if you head over to Eventbrite and follow God Pods 2024, or hop over to Instagram, follow it there. And if you enter promo code Geekshire, you see what we did there? Yeah. Wilbo Baggins approves. If you enter Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, you'll get $25 off your ticket price. Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, Geekshire. Yeah, say it with me, Geekshire. Enter that, you get money off your ticket, and you can join us and hang out and drink beer and have great food. And even if you don't drink beer, you can have incredible food and beverages and conversations with your favorite host here at Systemic Ecology. The Geek Stage is growing. I'm proud of that, and we thank Trip for this opportunity. We hope to see you at Theology Beer Camp, the Return of the God Pods 2024.
Hi, my name is TJ. I'm here to tell you about the Systematic Ecology Shop. That's where we post all of our merch. It is hosted on CreatorSpring, and we have a ton of really cool merch, mostly clothing. We have hats, extra soft t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, and more. Our hosts wear them all the time. It's actually super comfy. We have glassware, mugs, which everybody loves a good mug. Fill out your cupboard. Get rid of some old ones, which is the part that I never do. That's why I have too many cups. We have cloth bags, posters, and it's really stuff. We like to put our icons on there. We like to put quotes, things we come up with. And it's cool. It's a cool way, and a lot of it is pretty subtle too, to show support for one of your favorite shows. And my personal favorite is actually our SG dad cap, which I've been reluctant to buy it because now I have to wear hats at work, and then I get tired of wearing hats. But it's really cool. It's really understated. It is our logo right here, and then it says Systematic Ecology on the back. It's great. It's a really good hat. We have a few of them floating around. Check it out. And if we could all just rock the SG dad cap in public, I think that'd be pretty sweet.